Hello and welcome to Owning It, the podcast that celebrates the inspiring choices made by women who refused to simply follow the crowd and chose the road less traveled. I'm your host, Sandhya Tukaram, and in each episode, we'll have real conversations with these incredible women who choose to carve their own path because following just isn't an option. They may not be making headlines, but every one of them is a role model. So join me and let's explore the power of choice and the inspiration it brings right here on Owning It. Inspiring stories don't have a stereotype, except they are all about owning it. My guest today, Lalita Iyer, Managing Trustee of Plus Trust, channeled the grief of losing a child to enable opportunities for many, many more women through her organization. What started as something in her daughter's memory is today her driving purpose. Join me and be inspired by Lalita's story of strength and resilience. Lalita, hello. This is us in conversation in what, some 3-4 days apart. That's really testimony to how much I enjoyed speaking to you and how inspiring I think you are. And I feel anybody listening in on our conversation, there is something for them to take away from your story. Thank you for joining me on Owning It.
Thank you. Deeply honored, of course.
Not at all. I am honored. Lalita, I always, when I speak to my guests, I always take them back to their childhood. I always feel our stories always really start there, right? Inevitably, we are the outcomes of our early experiences. So tell me about young Lalita. Where did you grow up? What was childhood like? What were your aspirations?
I grew up in Chennai, but one leg in Chennai and one leg in our village. The village was Vadapadi Mangalam, where my father was working in a sugar factory.
Yeah.
And Chennai used to be my grandparents. So the school.
This was your paternal or maternal?
Paternal grandparents.
Grandparents.
So school used to be in Chennai and holidays used to be in Vadapadi Mangalam, which is near Thiruvarur.
Yeah.
So I suppose I grew up with two different sets of powerful influences, one being my parents and the other being my grandparents. Unlike other grandparents who are just there to cuddle, I think these also had to make sure that we were literate by the end of it.
They shaped your lives in a sense, so yeah.
I think they were major influences, both of them, in our lives. Me and my two brothers, both younger to me. So I was the first to leave my father and mother and go stay with my grandparents and so on and so forth. Aspirations, I don't remember so much as an aspiration. I think I was just a happy person and I loved storybooks and,
But did you ever think of, when I say aspirations, it's also like when I was about 10 years old, I was a big Sherlock Holmes fan and I thought when I grow up, I'd be a detective. So when Lalita was 10, what did she want to be when she grew up?
I don't know. I don't think I ever
aspired to
be. It was pretty obvious that I would be comfortable with academics. So I think if I thought I had aspirations, I thought I would study.
Okay.
What to study, how to study, all that wasn't so much in my head at that time.
Okay.
But, I think, academics came easily to me. So fiction and, creative writing became very absorbing. Like starting with Enid Blyton, I think I used to do a lot of pulp.
I used to love Enid Blyton too.
I developed this very profound, attentive look where under my school textbook I would be.
Yes.
Miss Hadley Chase or something like that.
Yeah. I remember those. I had a pretty good introduction to reading with Enid Blyton and Hardy Boys and then, maybe even Ayn Rand. Till I discovered Milsen Boone and killed my reading habits. But to stay with you, Lalita, so there was young Lalita who loved to read, who was academically inclined, the firstborn of three children, the other two being boys, spending time largely influenced both by your parents and your grandparents. What about young Lalita, you know, at the cusp of womanhood, adulthood? What was life like at that phase?
When I left school, I went and those days we used to have a one-year pre-university.
Mm.
So I joined this women's college for a pre-university. And I found it so stifling.
Which college was this?
This was called Ethiraj. I mean, fairly decent.
I know of it.
And we would have the then principal lecturing us as to how so-and-so is out of bounds and you should not talk to boys and things like that, which I thought was ridiculous. I mean, if somebody to talk to boys, she would talk. If she would talk, what is this rubbish kind of thing? Though my school was a girl's school, nobody taught us like that or lectured us about good behavior in that kind.
Good behavior in quotes. Yeah,
very childish way. So in a I think I was very clear that I didn't want to get caught in one of these regimented girls' colleges. At home, they said, "Oh, what are you going to do with studying? Maybe you should do history or you should do English."
Mm-hmm.
No, all that I can do on my own. I don't need to go to college for that. Yeah. I can't be so dumb as to take a BA degree.
Oh no, I have a BA degree, but we'll forget that.
And then my father said, "Oh, what are you going to do doing science, standing in a lab and all that, as if you're going to become a scientist?" So we ended up with my choosing statistics.
Mm.
Because it had statistics, I think mathematical economics and mathematics as subject.
Whoa, okay.
Then what practical are you going to have? So that is how my subject choice was. But in retrospect, I think I landed on my feet, so to say, because I enjoyed statistics, I enjoyed maths, and I enjoyed the atmosphere of Presidency College.
Where it wasn't constrained about not talking to boys.
Not only about talking to boys, I think it was a very laissez-faire place in those days.
Nice.
In a week, you would have two afternoons or three afternoons off, including Friday afternoon, which was when the movies would happen, the new movies. So, Monk Road was very close by. So, I mean, anything we wanted, there would be a gang of some 5-6 of us who would go and see.
What kind of movies were you all watching at that time?
Those were the years of many things. No? I remember seeing Chomana Dudi because it was almost free and I didn't understand a thing about it. I have a lot of Amitabh Bachchan movies. I think those were Abhiman days.
Yes.
And then there was also all the Rajesh Khanna stuff going on.
Yeah. So this was in the 60s. Late 60s.
Early
70s. At this point, were you thinking of a career, Lalita?
I wasn't thinking of a career, but it seemed pretty obvious that I had to earn a living. Because, we weren't in dire poverty or anything, but it wasn't as if we were floating in riches. So, obviously, I had to do something about generating some money for myself kind of thing. So, I was thinking that I would study statistics and maybe, do an MSc and then get a job as a statistician. That was as much as my ambitions went. But then somebody or other persuaded me to take this entrance exam for State Bank probationary officers. And the entry qualification was, you had to be a graduate, that's all. I got into SBI by the time I was midway through my master's. Part of me said maybe I should have just, I should just continue with the academics. And even my professor said, "What are you going to do? After this, you're again going to look for a job. So just go and take the job that has come. Don't be stupid." So that's how I joined the SBI. I think I joined in 76 and I completed my master's in 77.
Lovely. And so you've had a career mostly with the SBI?
The first 20 years of my working life, I worked with SBI. I joined as an officer. So, SBI, even today, I don't know. At that time, it was very strong. They believed that everybody can do everything.
That's great. That's very empowered of them.
They believed in the generalist is what kind of thing. So I had a variety of assignments, all of which I enjoyed and I learned a lot. So looking back, I was very lucky that, you know, I could get exposure to real things, you know, how industry works, how organization works, how people save, how people spend, what happens in villages, you know, that kind of exposure that
You learned both on the job, but also through life experiences because of the exposure.
The job itself brought in so many experiences into the room.
Actually, that's a very important point, and I think I'll link it to some of the questions I have for later. But I want to shift slightly from professional Lalitha to your personal life. Lalitha, the reason I shifted to your personal life is you experienced something that is most parents' worst nightmare, the loss of your child. If you can touch upon that, but I want to move from that point of losing your daughter and how you were able to channel the grief, that loss, to something that you're doing now that is supporting so many people across through your work with Plus Trust. So if we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course, losing her suddenly was a shock because she was in good health. And I mean, life was running on an even keel. And, you know, there's nothing really there that prepared me for what happened. But then once it happened, then of course, you know, how does one cope with it? How does one move on? And actually, what prompted Plus Trust was a joke that Sukku used to crack.
That is your daughter.
Yeah.
Sukanya, who you also called Gauri.
She, people would ask her very profound questions about her career ambitions and all that. And she was one laid back, though she did her master's in social work from TIS and then got into ACJ for journalism, which is when she died. She would never have the straight-jacketed answers of, you know, I want to do this, I want to do that. Unlike my elder daughter, who from 8th standard said she wants to be an architect, and she is an architect and enjoys being that. This one was like always undecided about what she wanted. And she used to say, you know what, anybody who asks her, what are you going to do? You should set up a foundation called Sukku Development Foundation and put money in it. I'll read storybooks using that money. That used to be her quip.
Oh, lovely though. A lovely aspiration.
And she would say this with a straight face to very pompous people. They wouldn't know what to do. So as somehow it seemed like it was not a joke, you know.
Seems something profound.
She might have actually done it if she had. So at that time, I think some of her friends, we got together. I mean, when they came to see me when she died, we talked about it and they all said, yeah, we should set up something. And that's how it started. Initially, one thing I knew was that I didn't have much money to put in it. You know, it's not as if I was sitting on pots of money. But doing something that will help young people who want to try something, that was the idea. That how do we reach out, find people who want to experiment with, with life, with their own lives, with their choices, with their ideas. And how can we be there for them? So that is how right from the beginning, we were clear that it would be fellowships and that, we would not get into field projects, but we'll work with young people who want to do something else. I think that role was very clear for us.
I still, though, want to stay with you making this choice. Like I said, this podcast is Lalitha's story. And what did it mean, Lalitha, you go through a really deep loss, a devastating loss, and then you decide to channel that and set up Plus Trust to support young children or young people, right? What did you have to learn and unlearn? Because one is to have an idea, but how do you make that come alive? You know, so what did you as a person, Lalitha, the statistician who read fiction in the library, what did you have to learn and unlearn?
I think I left SBI after about 20 years because I'd had enough of pretending to be a banker. I was eligible for a pension. So I felt I wouldn't be dependent on anybody. I would have my own, you know, kana pina ke liye. I don't have to listen to lectures. More than that, if others want from me, they can find it themselves. That kind of an idea. And so from 98 till, 2008, when Sukanya passed away, I was working in the development sector. I was working somewhat, to some extent, with microfinance, very much in the learning and development kind of space, and more in the experience-based learning space. So I was quite happy doing that, working with NGO projects, doing OD projects and things like that. And I think by about 2005-06, this phrase of social entrepreneur was very popular. It was just making the rounds. And I happened to work with a group which piloted a bunch of, it was called Social Impact. A cohort of, I think, 2 or 3 cohorts of people who were NGO founders who wanted to work more entrepreneurially so that they could sustain their work, that kind of transition. So I got a lot of these experiences of, looking at leadership transformation, looking at how you merge a social purpose and a viability which is inherent in the project. So when this happened and we wanted to start Plusters, I was quite aware that there's hardly anybody doing anything at the very nascent stage. When somebody has a proof of concept, then others can invest. But when somebody is just sitting and dreaming under a tree, who's there for them? A lot of people saying, don't do it. A lot of people telling them, you should concentrate on what you have, and so on and so forth. So we thought that, we should work with people like that. So that's why the plus trust, plus is also people like us. People like us can be read in many ways.
Well, that's lovely. I forgot earlier to ask what plus stood for.
So so it was like that. And some things happened which went well. And some things, even if we tried, wouldn't take off. So what wouldn't take off, we would drop along the way. Mm-hmm. And what really worked, we would carry on. So I think 5 years into the game, I thought many others had come out at that time with these kind of fellowships. In 2009, nobody was giving fellowships at this very nascent stage. But by 2013-14, there were fellowships on offer. And TIS itself has set up social entrepreneurship course, and they had some fund for micro incubation, for incubation and so on. So that is when we were reviewing our work. Like, we do a workshop for a bunch of people who want to do these things. And when they were doing their reflection, we also did as Plusters team what we thought of our own work. And it seemed very clear to us that this market is going to get crowded. And there are places where such things are needed but not available. So one was for women and the other was rural.
I want to step in here to, again, I want to talk about Lalita. And I know Plusters is you, it's not something else. But I want to stay slightly with the person versus the entity. What has it done for Lalita, the person? Because you told me that when you were young, you wanted to read and you were quite carefree, and laissez-faire was the word you used about a college, and which you liked. Has any of that changed with having a strong purpose, or can you still be carefree and laissez-faire and work towards something that means a lot to you?
See, Plusters, in a way, I may say that I started it in Sukanya's memory. But yes. If I'm honest today, I think it means a lot to me.
Today defines you. When you started it, it was for your daughter.
Yeah.
But today it is who you are.
Initially, maybe there was some resonance with her worldview. But after that, I mean, it took its own shape. So I think what I have been able to bring is my variety of experiences. One strong thread is, gender and gender mainstreaming. How does one recognize how gender plays out in everyday things? How does one intervene without making it one sloganeering kind of thing?
Yeah.
From the early 90s, I've been closely associated with many feminist friends and feminist organizations. Then in the NGO space and in the development space between 2000 and 2008, a lot of exposure to OD and change facilitation, as well as microfinance and livelihood promotion and all the associated things. So I think Clusters has given me a space to experiment how I can bring all this together and make something very light.
Mm.
You know, for me, the most important thing in Clusters is that if we want to close it today, we can close it today. There is a network that is evolving and the network carries the work. So the core.
Do you feel that's representative of who you are as a person? Because you've mentioned that in many ways. Was it important for you to keep it light?
Yes, important to keep it light and stick to the core and the meaningful aspect of it, rather than get lost in setting up a procedure, setting up infrastructure, and then wondering who's going to use the infrastructure. I mean, maybe it wouldn't have come if I tried, but I didn't even try to do all that.
Lalita, what strikes me is, and this is only the second conversation I'm having with you, and I haven't known you previously, but even in these two limited conversations, you come across as unflappable, very balanced. Do you think that is indeed the case? And does that help a lot in what you want to do? Or are there things that throw you off gear?
Well, I do think I have deep resilience. If I were to look at what is my core strength, I think it is this capacity to just slow down and stay calm. Things seem to be completely haywire kind of thing. And I would put that down to the work I do in this network called ISAPS, Indian Society for Applied Behavioral Science. We are a bunch of facilitators, and we facilitate learning that happens in the moment. Working in the here and now in a good setting. That is the core work that we do. So I think this practice of being in the here and now and practice of understanding a group, both those things I think have really been important in the way I look at life, the way I see things.
I don't know if anyone listening, I'm sure they will be inspired, but it definitely inspires me because I'm the most off-balance person I know. So when I look at you, there's a little bit of envy and there's definitely a lot of admiration.
I'm also off-balance in many ways, in the sense that when I left the bank, there were so many people who tried to convince me that it was bad for me in the long run. And then when Sukanya died and when I had further challenges in life at that time, people said, if only you had stayed in the bank, it would have been much more secure at this time. But I said, not being in the bank gave me a lot of time to deal with all this. If I'd been...
No, absolutely. And I don't think that's off balance at all. I think that's incredible balance that you chose. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation. You've made your choices and lived as much as possible on your own terms. And that's the reason why we have these conversations, that more and more people make your choices. It doesn't mean you won't falter. It doesn't mean you won't get it wrong. It's still your choice.
And I think that is my core belief that is reflected in cluster stools. That, you know, people should have a chance to try. Only then whether they'll know whether they make it or break it.
Absolutely. I want to end, Lalita, with more forward-looking. 5 years from now, what would you feel like it's been worth it? What would be very satisfying for you in 5 years?
I suppose one would be that Plus Trust is on stable footing.
Ground, yeah.
My being there, I would love to be associated with it, but not as the primary responsibility holder.
Yeah.
And the other part is that I would look forward to more time to myself, quieter time. Again, more of the reading that I now like to do.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, would it be fiction?
That's what I don't have time for fiction. Like, you know, for instance, no, I told myself for a long time that I should read Sangha Ilakkiyam. You know, it's been there since my childhood. I know it exists. Yeah, and if I don't do it around 70, 75, when am I ever going to do it? No, things like that. Like there is a huge list of to be read in two or three languages that I want to tackle.
So I want to meet you 5 years from now, probably under the shade of a tree, reading all the fiction in the world, Lalita. And you've lived an amazing life. More power to you. And thank you for showing us all that, you know, it is possible to own it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
With every conversation with women who are taking control of their narrative, I'm constantly inspired. Don't forget to tune into the next conversation with yet another woman choosing her own path and owning it.